This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Fantasy freaks and geeks, it's James Kell from the Sleeper King Football Podcast. We all know sleepers can win you championships, but finding these guys takes time. That's where the Sleeper King comes in. Let me do all the research so you don't have to. Every week, I'm going to break down which sleepers you need to pick up off the waiver wire and which surprise deep sleepers could help you win the week. Every episode, just 15 to 20 minutes long, every Tuesday through Friday. Subscribe to the Sleeper King Football Podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your pods.
From the Stifel Financial Sports Studio, Tom Ackerman.
Well, my friend Barry Odom is no longer going to be my friend, unfortunately. I hate losing friends. But it looks like reports are out this morning that he's going to be the next coach at Purdue. Wow. Former Missouri coach. What a great guy he is. Of course, I'm kidding about that. I love Barry Odom. As an Indiana alum, I will playfully enjoy that rivalry with him. And I'm excited for him and excited for today, college football. You know, yesterday as an Indiana alum, I just kind of sat back and enjoyed the day. I was in and out watching the football games. Didn't feel one ounce of stress because I knew Indiana's going to be in the playoff today. Some may argue that, but that's fine. We're just happy to be here. We'll play on the road, neutral, home. I don't care where. I really do not care where they play as long as they're playing on December 20th or 21st. And it looks like they are projected as a 7-10 game against Notre Dame is what most are projecting. We're going to find out in an hour when the college football bracket is revealed. After yesterday's games, a lot still kind of hanging out there, though. The big decision will be, do they include SMU or do they include Alabama? The case can be made for SMU after having a tremendous year. They lost the ACC title game last night on a kickoff return that went awry. They never defend things that poorly, it doesn't seem, in special teams, but they had at the absolute worst time something go poorly against them. And then Clemson booted a 56-yard field goal to beat them. And they are the ACC champions, the Clemson Tigers. SMU had not lost since September 6th before that loss last night. And that loss was 18-15 against BYU. So you have to go all the way back to September 6th. Not a bad loss at all to BYU, a team that was in contention all season long, ultimately will not be after losing some late games in the Big 12. But that's where SMU sits now, hoping that they can get in as an at-large. Clemson does get in because they're the ACC champion, but they can't get a bye. Then the other question is, does Alabama deserve a spot? Now, the SEC has a lot of muscle and a lot of influence. And will they push somehow the committee to put Alabama in? They're trying to make their case. Ole Miss is hollering too, and so is South Carolina and everybody else in the ACC. They think they should be in. Not everybody can get in. But does Alabama deserve to be in just because they're Alabama? They've got a great brand. We kind of went through this last year. They got in, but that was four. This is 12 now. And Alabama could very well be put in the bracket because of their overall brand. Now, their resume, they have some really nice wins, you have to admit. You can focus on the losses first. They lost to Vanderbilt and they lost to Oklahoma, and they got crushed at Oklahoma. They also lost, you know, when you look across the league, let's just say this. When you look across football, it is hard to win. And Alabama learned that the hard way. They lost to Vanderbilt. They lost to Oklahoma. They also lost at Tennessee. That is not a bad loss whatsoever. They also beat Georgia. And now that Georgia is the SEC champion, that win definitely helps them and is something that the committee is going to be talking about probably down to the final minute here. Although I'd assume here at 10:10 Central Time that they have this thing wrapped up. But Alabama would have a case there. Even with three losses, they could make the case that, hey, we lost to Tennessee, we beat Georgia, and yes, we lost to Vanderbilt, but they turned out to be not a bad team, and the one that hurts them is at Oklahoma at night, which they would say, you know, that was a bad one for us, but it is Oklahoma at night, blah, blah, blah. Alabama will do anything to get in here. They'll make the case anyway. Me, personally, I don't know. I think this is one year where you got to keep Alabama out. I think SMU earned it. But SMU lost last night with a chance to get in. So it is a toss-up between the two, and we'll see where it goes. And whoever gets in there, it's going to be interesting. You're going to be paired in there with Notre Dame and Indiana and Tennessee and Ohio State and Penn State and Texas. And, you know, there's some others that are going to make some noise, I think. Your byes are going to be, of course, 1 through 4. You'll have Oregon 1. They won the Big Ten. Georgia 2. They won the SEC. Boise State 3. They won the Mountain West. And Arizona State 4. They won the Big 12. And those are rightfully so. Clemson's going to get in now as an 11 or a 12 because they won the ACC. So sorting it all out is not the easiest thing, but that's what the committee has to do, and we are going to find out in about an hour the entire thing. And at that time, Eli Drinkwitz is going to join us, the head coach of the Missouri Tigers. Eli is not going to be in the playoff, but at 9-3, he's had a very fine season, is going to play in a really good bowl against a very respectable opponent. So we'll hear about all the things that he's doing in recruiting as well to build that program. He's at 11:15. At 10:15, in just a few minutes, Tom Hart from Mizzou Arena. The Tigers are getting ready to play Kansas. The number one team in the nation is in the house. They are ready to go, and they'll be playing in Columbia against their rival, the Tigers. They are 6.5-point favorites to beat Missouri this afternoon. At 10:30, Earl Austin Jr., the Billikens analyst, the Billiken Hall of Famer, the Missouri Sports Hall of Famer, will be with us, the radio analyst, at 10:30 to talk about SLU and Chicago State. They play today at 2 o'clock. At 10:45, Blues general manager Doug Armstrong will be with us live. The Blues lost last night at Edmonton 4-2, but they are playing well overall with Coach Jim Montgomery, and we'll talk to Army about that. Eli Drinkwitz at 11:15. John Mozeliak from the winter meetings in Dallas at 11:30 has agreed to join us, and we look forward to our regular visit with him resuming at 11:30. And then to wrap it all up, a great conversation set at 11:45 with Bernie Miklas. Cannot wait for this show. It's a great lineup of guests, and we'll bring it all to you right after this.
He hits a slammer!
Graybar, your distributor for electrical and datacom needs.
Billikens win! Billikens win!
Once again, from the Stiefel Financial Sports Studio, Tom Ackerman.
For those of you watching our live stream on social media, and we've got a big viewership right now, we always appreciate that big show here. I do have a suit on. It is being noted by our comments and folks. And yes, I'm calling the game today on TV. Billikens play Chicago State, and calling the game in Columbia is ESPN's Tom Hart. It is great to be back with him. Tom, thank you so much for taking a few minutes on what I know is a busy time over there at Mizzou Arena. How are you? Tom Hart, you hear me? Yeah, we've lost Tommy. Drew, let's reconnect with Tom Hart, see if you can get him. That's no big deal. He is calling the game today, Mizzou and Kansas, a 6.5-point spread in that game. And Kansas is the number one team in the nation, but they will be facing a raucous crowd today at Mizzou Arena. You can count on that. Missouri is, I think, a team that more people should be talking about than they are, and me included. You know, I know that we talk a lot about what's going on with SLU here. Illinois has captured everyone's attention as a very good team, even though they lost to Northwestern. They are one of the better defensive efficient teams in the country, and they're going to be very tough. But this Missouri team is good. They just dropped 98 points on Cal, and we're joined by Tom Hart, who's going to be watching them play Kansas. How are you, Tom? Maybe Tom can't hear us. It's very possible. It could be an issue on our end with our board. Go ahead and take him away there, Drew, and we'll try it one last time if you can work some magic. And otherwise, and by the way, that doesn't bode well for all of our phone guests if they can't hear us. So we'll have to figure that out. But like I was saying, Missouri's good. I mean, they've got a real chance. Tom, can you hear us now? All right, you'll have to figure that out, Drew. If we can't get our phone guest to hear us, we got an issue. It could be just on his end. Well, let's say bye to Tom and thank him very much for me, if you would. He's at Mizzou Arena. Busy time over there. Tigers taking on the Jayhawks. But let me preview the game from my perspective, if you can. And I'm going to give you as honest a feel on this as I can. Kansas is very, very good. And Kansas is, what they're going to do is, you know, something that maybe you know, what we haven't seen in the past from them. They do love to shoot the three. They have in the past, but this team is big and strong, and they've got their big man underneath in Hunter Dickinson. He is over 7 feet. He's an absolute monster in there. He's terrific at scoring underneath the basket. He can score away from the basket, but he's very good at those little Mike and drill type buckets, you know, those little reverse layups, little hook shots, little layups underneath. He doesn't miss those. He's averaging 14.5 per game, 9 rebounds per game. He'll block some shots too. Zeke Mayo is a really good shooter. He shoots from three, but other than that, they don't really shoot the three a ton. They will pound you inside, and I'm curious if Missouri has the size and ability to stop them from that perspective. We know Missouri can score from the outside, and they can shoot the trifecta without question. I know that we have a really good feel here when it comes to what Mizzou's Dennis Gates has in the future. He's got a great recruiting class coming. He has a great recruiting class currently. But the big question is, does he have a team right now that can compete in the SEC and certainly that can compete in a primetime slot against Kansas? We're going to find out. I went last year to see Kansas play in a raucous atmosphere at Indiana and a similar situation where Indiana was, I think, you know, a little bit shorthanded, but also a little bit up against it in terms of talent level on the floor. But the crowd really urged them on. And in the end, Kansas won the game by 4 because they're just a better team. And they also have the experience, Dickinson especially, in playing in big raucous atmospheres. It does not bother him for 1 second, nor does it bother Bill Self, who's won 802 games in his career. So it should be fun. I look forward to this one. It's Mizzou and Kansas. It's going to be a noon start on ESPN2. We just couldn't, Drew, what Tom Hart told me is that he heard us the entire time, but he was not able, when he was talking, we weren't hearing him. So whatever reason that was, the phone connection just didn't work. But we appreciate Tom's time, no doubt about it. I want to let him get back to work because he's calling the game on TV. But I know he did want to come on and join us, but we just couldn't make the phone connection. Missouri and Kansas at noon. Now, coming up, it's SLU and Chicago State at 2. We are going to have the pregame at 1:45, but Earl Austin Jr. is going to join us here very shortly at 10:30. We also are keeping an eye on college football and all of the things that happened to make this college football playoff announcement somewhat complicated and a bracket that will be revealed that is going to make people upset. Here's my thing on it before we take a break and go to Earl on this college football playoff. The one chance they have to expand the playoff and to continue to bring in fans, and they're doing fine. Bringing in college football fans is one thing, but the casual sports fan has now taken more of an interest, I think, in college football because these teams are more in the race towards the end of the year and there's a lot more intrigue. Could you make it any more complicated for people to understand? I mean, do you have to give a bye to conference champions who weren't in the hunt a week ago? I mean, Clemson isn't going to get a bye, but they're in the playoff. Arizona State, look, they've been hot. I mean, they've been playing really well, but they suddenly vault all the way into a bye in the college football playoff because the way that it's structured is the conference champion of the top 4 ranked conferences gets a bye. I mean, Georgia, I understand they rallied back and won the SEC championship. Oregon, of course, has a clean sheet, a great record, perfect, and they beat Penn State in that shootout yesterday. But Boise State and Arizona State are getting a bye. I'm not necessarily complaining about that, but what's going to happen is these rankings will come out. They're going to rank them 1 through 12, and then they're going to seed them differently. And then fans of other teams can be like, wait a minute, how come we don't go here, and why don't we get in there, and we beat this team and they beat that team? Arguments are one thing, but I feel like they complicated this thing by making the conference tournament or conference game champion getting a bye. Just seems kind of odd and sort of a stumble to the finish after what has been a crazy fun season. You should just seed them 1 through 12. Like, how hard is that? If you win your conference, you get in. But you don't have to get a bye because of that. I mean, you just seed them and just let it rip. And by the way, I'd expand it even further. I'd go 16 teams and do a classic Sweet 16. I mean, it works for basketball. Why does this have to be such a complicated issue? I don't know. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll hear from Earl Austin Jr., the analyst for St. Louis University, Doug Armstrong at 10:45, Eli Drinkwitz at 11:15, John Mozeliak at 11:30, Bernie Miklas at 11:45. This is Sports on a Sunday Morning, sponsored by Gray Bar. We're in the Stiefel Sports Studio, and we'll be right back. Good to be back with you. We're joined by Billiken Hall of Famer and recently Missouri Sports Hall of Famer, Earl Austin Jr. on KMOX. Good morning, Earl.
Morning, TA. How are you today?
I'm doing well, buddy. We were just visiting with Tom Hart, who's calling the Mizzou KU game, but his phone was not agreeing with us inside Mizzou Arena. As you can imagine, it is getting very busy over there. He's calling the game. So before we talk Billikens, can I ask you for a one answer analysis here on Mizzou KU? How do you see that one as they tip off at noon today?
It's going to be exciting, no doubt about it. It'll be interesting because KU is now coming off a loss to Creighton in Omaha. And they're coming in probably with a little extra focus. I think Mizzou, the one game I watched was last week where they fell behind the Cal and made a great comeback, down 15 at halftime and scored, 66 in the second half. So I think it's going to be very competitive. I think the last time KU was there was 2 years ago when Mizzou was 9-0 and riding high, and KU came in there and beat them up pretty good. So I expect a wild atmosphere, and it should be a fun day at Como today.
No doubt. Anytime Bill Self walks through the tunnel, that is a crazy day inside that building. And Mizzou and KU will hook up at noon. And then once you're done watching that, you can flip over to KMOX because Earl Austin Jr. will be calling the game with Bob Ramsey. It's just one of those great basketball days. It'll be SLU and Chicago State. Where do you see SLU at the moment? Obviously dealing with some injuries and some health issues, Earl.
That's the main thing right now. Obviously 5-3 and coming off a tough loss in San Francisco, but just getting everybody healthy at once. We haven't had that all season. It started when Robbie got hurt. Avila got hurt during the preseason and missed a month of preseason, then came back and got hurt in the very first game against Santa Clara. And now he's back, fighting his way back. But now Kellen is playing hurt with the cramp issues. Larry Hughes is out with the back. And now we got some guys who are, A.J. Casey's out, and then we got some guys who are under the weather. So it's a battle. You just got to kind of soldier through because, the late, great Charlie Spoonhauer said, he goes, nobody else cares about your problems. So we just got to suit it up and get ready to play Chicago State today and hopefully get healthy for the rest of the non-conference and then obviously a conference season, which is most important.
It is, and I think that the A-10 is pretty well stacked, at least towards the top, isn't it, Earl? I mean, who do you have there? VCU, Dayton obviously is off to a great start. St. Joseph should be really good. Can SLU hang with those teams?
Well, that's the main thing. If we can get healthy and we got, three guys at the top, obviously Robbie Gibson and Isaiah, it gives you an opportunity. But as you said, Dayton looked real good at the Maui Classic, although 1-2, a big win against Connecticut. Rhode Island and Arch Miller is really going well. They're 9-0. They beat Providence last night as well. VCU is always good. Loyola Chicago, they're going to be good. St. Joe's, yeah. So it's going to be a much more competitive A-10 slate from top to bottom. So I think we get everybody healthy and continue to develop, I think we'll be in the mix somehow, but we just got to get everybody right.
Got to get everybody healthy. There's no doubt about that. Yeah. I think that one of the keys to this thing is the development and obviously the health of A.J. Casey. He is one of those players I think they're going to need in the A-10. Do you agree with that? Even though we've seen this rotation without him, I got to think he's included if he's healthy.
Well, I think a key is, like you say, you need that added size. You know, right now it's basically Robbie and Kalu, and then we're kind of small after that. So AJ at 6'9", and he's got that athleticism. He can shoot it a little bit. Yeah, somebody else with some size. Because you know, there are going to be some games where Robbie may get in the foul trouble, Kalu gets in the foul trouble. That added size is going to have to come into play once you face, you know, some of these real good, big athletic teams in our league.
How do you view the returnees here in Kellen Thames and Larry Hughes in terms of health, in terms of effectiveness? Let's start with Thames and what you know, what you understand about the cramping issues he's endured.
Don't know a whole lot about it, but it's been an issue now for the past 4 or 5 games. I think Fred Fetch may have gone through something similar a few years back, but I'm not sure. But it's tough because Kellen really was playing tremendous basketball coming out of the gate. He was averaging about 15 points, 8 rebounds. He's a great athlete. He plays with a tremendous motor. And so since the cramping has come up, it's kind of limited him to 15 minutes a game. And you know, when healthy, he is kind of that fourth or fifth guy that you really didn't have to run a play for, but he's going to get a lot done because he's so active and so athletic around the basket. And we can get that full health of Kellen back. That would really help us immeasurably.
And Hughes, a couple of games ago, got hit in the midsection and then got up and I think returned. And then in practice, he gets hit on the other side of his body, his tailbone, if I'm not mistaken, in a fall.
Yes.
So
yeah.
He's out today, isn't he?
Yeah, I believe he's out today. It'll be his second game missed. And what we miss with Larry is that shooting. You know, obviously he's got that length and that defense, but that ability to shoot the ball and come off the bench and give you a little bit of offense as well. And, I think his coming back has to be big because one of our other guards, Josiah Dutzler, tore his ACL. He's out for the season. He was a potential starter. He was starting to play a lot and get into the flow. And then he went down with an ACL injury. So we definitely need Larry back to provide that perimeter shooting that he's pretty good at.
This is unbelievable. The last time I remember the Billikens dealing with so many absences was during COVID. I mean, I can't remember them being without this many people.
Yeah, it's a test, no doubt about it. A lot of adversity, so we just got to battle through it, and hope guys can kind of work their way back in the lineup, and then once we get somebody, nobody else falls off by the wayside, and hopefully by the conference season we'll have everybody as healthy as they're going to be, and then we can move forward, and then I think that's when you can really make a true judgment on what this team can be moving forward.
This is a very calm, confident coach in Josh Schertz. I really have enjoyed being around him, both at Indiana State and now here at St. Louis University. I've always found him to be fascinating. He does not take anything seriously except basketball. Everything else, he is fun and lighthearted. This is a test for him, I believe, of not, you know, flying off the handle here and getting frustrated with all the injuries and things that are happening.
Well, yeah, I remember, like I said, he's used to building things. You know, he did it at Lincoln Memorial at the Division II level. And then at Indiana State, he did the same thing. Well, they went 3 games his first year there. And by year 3, they won 32 and went to the NIT Finals and was playing, you know, had one of the most exciting teams to watch playing basketball. So, yeah, this is kind of the same thing. I know there's a lot of excitement, and rightly so. But like you said, with the injuries and, you know, you got some tough early losses to Wichita. And then the other night, you're kind of back to kind of building and developing again, so I don't think it's no need to panic. I can remember a day where we had a Hall of Fame coach and we scored 20 points in a game against George Washington.
Oh, I remember
Rick Majerus. Yeah, and couple years later, we saw how that turned out as well. So once again, like I say, it's part of the, you know, she's used to the growing pains of trying to build once again. And I think that's what we're seeing right now as well.
Earl Austin Jr. is with us on KMOX. Let's talk about some good new faces. And that, of course, we mentioned Robbie Avila and we mentioned Kalu Anya, who is a rebounding machine. And I think even more than that, he can score, he can pass. He's got unbelievable effort. I love this player. And then, of course, Isaiah Swope. Isaiah Swope was picked as third team A-10. I think that will change when this season is over. He is one of the most explosive scorers I have ever seen in a Billiken uniform.
It really is fun to watch, you know, at 5'11", 5'10", but he's just so quick and so explosive, as you said. Great burst with the ball, but he can get to the rim, but then he can also pull up and score from 20, 25 feet from the basket. So when he's on, he really, really could put on a show. We call it the Swope Show now. And I think he was like the mid-major madness player of the week. And he was also the Lute Olsen player of the week. So he's going to be fun to watch for this next year. And obviously Robbie speaks for himself. Now that he's getting back healthy, you see the size and the skill set and his passing ability. And he can shoot the three and kind of just a tremendous multi-dimensional big man, kind of what we're seeing throughout the game of basketball. Like I say, Kalu, great effort. Like you say, rebounding, high motor, averaging about 10, 11 rebounds a game, and just a lot of fun to watch as well. And probably the one, and obviously not a newcomer, but probably the highlight of this early part of the season, obviously what happened the other night in our loss with Gibson Jemison, breaking the school scoring record by Anthony Bonner, which stood for 35 years or something like that. And Gibson, to see him break it, to watch how he's kind of rewarded for his hard work as a Billiken. And he'll go over 2,000 soon, and just been a tremendous player to watch over the course of his career.
No kidding. He'll be it'll be tough to catch him when he's done in terms of scoring. Of course, a sixth-year player certainly aids him in that respect, but I love the respect that Bonner and others have given to Jemison. And on top of that, I anticipate today will be special. I have to think that they will do something very special for Gibson inside the arena today.
Right. I think one of the reasons why they respect him, you know, because they know he played the extra year or so, but the fact that he remained a Billiken. And, you know, he, in this NIL and this portal deal, he could have, with the coaching change, he could have easily walked. Just like, you know, when there's a coaching change, usually everybody leaves. But he stayed here and wanted to remain a Billiken. And I think that garners you a lot of respect as well. And he was able to break records and continue on with his great career here in St. Louis.
And finally, speaking of respect, last thing for Earl Austin Jr. is how much we respect you being part of our family and how proud we were to see you and Jim Jackson sitting next to each other at the Chase a couple of Sundays ago at the Missouri Sports Hall of Fame banquet. What an incredible time that had to have been. Unbelievably special for you up there.
It really was. I really had a wonderful time, and I still want to thank the Missouri Hall of Fame for Sports Hall of Fame for that honor. It was a tremendous ceremony, and the fact that I was really more happy for Jim Jackson. The fact it was ironic that we were sitting next to each other, because we've been sitting next to each other for over three decades now. He's been taking care of me and Rammer, and he's been taking care of all of us in the announcing booth, broadcast booth, like that. So that was even more exciting to be able to share that particular honor with Jim, because he does so much for so many of us behind the scenes. But yeah, it is a lot of fun too. It was a great event.
And Earl, your work with the St. Louis American is not only important in our city's history, but also second to none. And I just am so happy for you and proud of you.
Well, thank you. I'm really proud of our St. Louis American family, and just proud to be a small part of the great impact that they have had in our community for a century now, almost.
I can't wait to see you today. Have a great call. I will wave to you from across the floor.
All right. You take it easy. Look forward to seeing you again, always.
All right. Thank you. Earl Austin Jr. He'll have the call today as the Billikens take on Chicago State at 2 o'clock right here on KMOX. Our Billiken Report is sponsored by Royal Banks of Missouri. When we come back, we'll be joined by Blues General Manager Doug Armstrong. Stay tuned. This is Sports on a Sunday Morning on KMOX. 10:48, great to have you with us on KMOX, and we welcome in live the General Manager of the St. Louis Blues, Doug Armstrong, the President of Hockey Operations. Good morning, Army. It's great to have you back. How are you?
I'm very good. How are you today?
I'm doing great. I look forward to seeing you next Monday the 16th. You are going to be presenting our Legends Award winner at the Jack Buck Awards. He is none other than Hockey Hall of Famer Ken Hitchcock. And what a treat it will be to hear Hitch speak to the Blues fans once again.
Oh, yeah, it's always great when Ken comes back into town. He's got such a great resume, but also a great storyteller, so it should be an excellent evening.
It is a fun time, no doubt about it. I love emceeing it and seeing all of you up there, and we're going to have an absolute blast. And also in the house will be Jim Montgomery, the head coach of the Blues, and it reminded a lot of people of the move that you made when Davis Payne was relieved of his duties, and you hired Ken to take over the Blues. You had an opportunity to get him. He was working with Columbus, and one of the elite coaches in the game took over behind your bench. Do you see it a similarity with Jim Montgomery?
Yeah, there certainly are some correlations that even an experienced coach that has an excellent resume becomes available, and you want to move forward with it. And both coaches, I thought, could help younger players get better and veteran players get maximized where they're going. And also feeling that they could be here as we grew, Ken fit that bill, and so does Jim. So I thought it was a synergy with our group was going to be good, and we acted.
I have been asked this a lot, so I'll ask the man who made the move. What has been the difference? Well, from what I can tell, and from what I hear behind the closed doors, there's more harmony and you know, just overall good feelings, and that does happen when you win some games, but also just an aggressiveness and, you know, more accountability perhaps from everybody up and down the roster. Do you feel that under Montgomery?
Yes, but I think you always feel that under a new coach. You know, I think what we talk about internally is like, let's as we're in the honeymoon phase and it's kumbaya all around, let's make sure we're building a foundation, because that's going to wear off. And when that wears off, we want to be able to continue to grow and have something that we can build off of. But right now, the guys have a pep in their step, and they're playing good hockey, and we just have to continue that. But, you know, I think they call it the dead cat bounce. Everybody gets that, but at some point, that goes away, and I just have a lot of faith that Jim's going to be able to guide us when that emotional part is gone and the day-to-day work is there to do every day.
Yeah, the big picture, absolutely. Instead of making determinations in the short term, what is the big picture identity, Doug Armstrong? What do you want the Blues to be here, aside from champions, of course? What do you want them to look like over the next, let's say, 2, 3, and 5 years under Jim Montgomery?
Yeah, I think what we want to do is have a good 200-foot foundation. We want to be able to play the games in many different ways. Like when your core or leading players, top players are feeling good, those nights are great. You know, the puck just seems to follow them around. You know, they just have that extra little mojo. But what you want to do, or what we'd like to see, is just have a foundation where our floor is closer to our ceiling. What you don't like is when your good games are good, but your bad games are awful. And what we need to do is get a really strong plan B every night. And I think that's what Jim can do. But what we want to do is be a strong competitive team, a team that plays 60 minutes every night, a team that understands how the value of the blue lines, the value of clock management, the value of playing for each other. And those things, once they're ingrained, you can have a bad puck night, but if that stuff's there, it covers up a lot of the other stuff.
I had a coach in another sport. I love the term floor because it really is important when it comes to team sport. A coach in another sport told me, he goes, think of it in golf. So if your floor is that you shoot 90 on a bad day or in the 80s on a bad day, you're a pretty good player. If your floor is that you shoot 100 on a bad day, you're not a good player. I mean, you got to get your floor to a better number. And when you look at any sport, that does make sense, doesn't it? If you're having a bad day and you're the St. Louis Blues, you got to find a way to remain competitive in that game, even if things are misfiring.
Yeah, and Mike Keene, who I work with in Dallas, and I consider a friend, had a, he said this to me. We were talking a while ago, and I, you know, his belief was just because the plan A doesn't work doesn't mean you have to lose. And so you have to have a plan B, and that plan B has to be sustainable. And that is getting the most out of the game when it's not there for you, and understanding the nights that the puck's not your friend and you have to do the right things, understanding the meaning of being, you know, in a tie game in the third period, you know, when to take risks, when not to take risks, play for the guy beside you, you know, protect the goalies. And a lot of the things that I think, you know, we that have happened, not just recently, but the things that bother you as a manager is when you're, let's say you're down 4-1 in a game, and as a manager, you want to protect the goalie, you want to get out of that game 4-1, and then players start to take chances, and all of a sudden it's 6 or 7 or 8-1, and that really bothers you, because when you know, people are judged on stats, and all of a sudden, like, you lose a game 4-1, the goals against and the save percentage takes a hit, but when you lose it 7-8-1, it gets crucified. and it's like a plus minus too. It just, you know, just understanding and playing for another day and doing things the right way, and those things that are, they're boring, players don't want to do them, but those are winning habits and winning traits.
Just a couple minutes left with Doug Armstrong, so just two more questions if I can. One is Justin Falk. So he was back in the lineup, and was he okay? Well, he logged 25 minutes. That was more than anybody else. So not a bad return, I would say. Everything good there?
Yeah. I think what we tell the players, when you're ready to play, you have to be ready to play. We saw that with Buchnevich and Thomas. They train so well. These guys are such finely tuned machines that when they come back in, they want to play Broberg the same way. But yeah, when these guys are ready to go, the coach has to put the guys out on the ice that give us the best chance to win on any given shift and any given night. And Falk's one of those players that logged those minutes prior to the injury, and he's going to log them now that he's back.
And we heard the good news about Colton Parayko and Jordan Binnington, who are going to be representing their nation. How about Snuggerud and Dvorsky, who have had some big games recently? And Dvorsky, it was just announced, is going to be among the Blues prospects heading to the World Juniors in Ottawa after Christmas. Doug?
Yeah, I'm really excited for him. He's been there multiple times, and this is his last opportunity to represent his country at this level. The next time he'll do it will be there either at the World Championships or the Olympics. So it's a great opportunity for him not only to be an A player for his team, but also counted on a leadership role. And, you know, I think we could have upwards of at a minimum probably 6 and a maximum 9 guys in the World Junior, which is going to be very impressive for our organization. And it solidifies our vision of where what we're trying to do is stay competitive now and build for the future. And you know, we're in lots of games right now, but having young players that are going to play in that World Junior, and Snuggy is not available for that. He's a year out, but I expect him in an NHL jersey by the end of this season. And so our future is looking good. Dvorsky's playing really good in the American Hockey League. I think that team has got points in, I think, 10 out of their last 12 and are on a little bit of a roll right now. We have good play from lots of different guys. So there's a lot of positives away from St. Louis and about our organization.
No doubt about it. And look forward to seeing those two wearing the blue note at some point. And look forward to seeing you next week. Good luck Tuesday night at Vancouver. We appreciate the visit very much.
Always a pleasure coming on the show, and we'll see you next week.
Thank you. Doug Armstrong, the president of hockey operations, general manager of the St. Louis Blues, joining us on KMOX. We always love hanging with him. Coming up next hour, Eli Drinkwitz, John Mozeliak, Bernie Miklas, and, of course, the college football playoff bracket revealed. Don't go anywhere.
From the Stifel Financial Sports Studio, Tom Ackerman.
We have a great trio of guests coming up this hour. Eli Drinkwitz, John Mozeliak, Bernie Miklas. At 11:15, 11:30, and 11:45, respectively, we are going to, in a few moments, hear the college football playoff rankings reveal, and then they will reveal the bracket. The selection show is underway right now. ESPN is running that, and we, of course, are keeping tabs on it, so you can keep it right here as we watch, and then we'll have Eli Drinkwitz on as a lot of that is going on. But we'll talk a lot about Mizzou and what they're doing. Mizzou KU about to go at noon and Columbia at Mizzou Arena. And the Billikens will play at 2 o'clock today, 1:45 pregame for them against Chicago State. That game can be heard on KMOX. We talked to Earl Austin Jr. last hour, and we also heard from Doug Armstrong. Great conversation with the Blues GM. You can go back and listen on the Odyssey app. It'll be podcast. I really think that you should, we're on Apple Podcasts, Sports on a Sunday Morning, that you should subscribe to our podcast and make sure that in case you miss anything, that you get our podcast. Our podcast has done very well over many, many years. We were one of the originals, I think, when it came to pushing the podcast out there, because it does hold up. Sports on a Sunday Morning does hold up throughout the week. You know, we talk to a lot of the big names, movers and shakers, when it comes to making decisions. And a lot of these things, I think, sometimes need to be held in podcasts so you can listen to them whenever you want. So that's what I would do. I would just subscribe right now to Sports on a Sunday Morning podcast, Apple Podcasts or Odyssey or wherever you can, wherever you like to do it is fine with us. We also have the Gas House Gang. That's another one. Those aren't on Apple yet. We got to get those on Apple Podcasts. I know there's a lot of red tape you got to cut through sometimes to get those on. But that one is a lot of fun. That one is a four-man crew tomorrow. Bernie Miklas will be with me, Matt Pauly, live from the winter meetings in Dallas, and Kevin Wheeler. He's going to be with us as well. All four of us will be. And Matt and Claves and Ricky Horton are all going to be at the winter meetings in Dallas. So we'll be keeping tabs with what's happening with the Cardinals. And John Mozeliak will be there as well. And he's going to join us on the show here coming up at 11:30. Last hour, Earl Austin Jr., Doug Armstrong, we thank them very much for being with us. And we have Drink and Mo and the Big Dog coming up as our next three guests. Well, let me talk a little bit about what's happening. All right, let me set the table for what is about to be announced here, this college football playoff ranking and then bracket. Last night, a couple of things were decided. One was that Clemson is in some way, shape, or form. They will not get a first-round bye, but Clemson won the ACC last night. They beat SMU 34-31. It was crazy how it ended, too. They won it by returning a kick and finding a way to get, after SMU had just tied the game with 16 seconds left, to send it to overtime. There was still time on the clock, and Clemson returned the kick 41 yards to midfield. And then after a 17-yard pass play, Clemson called a timeout. They had the ball at the SMU 38. And they kicked a 56-yard field goal to win the game. Just a special teams breakdown that ended up with a victory for Clemson over SMU. Does it knock SMU out of the playoff completely? Some believe it does. Others believe Alabama will slip in there in place of them. We'll see. We'll see. I'm not really sure what they're going to do here, but that was one game. The other one that determined a lot was Georgia and Texas. Georgia gets a first-round bye. They win the SEC. They win 22-19 in overtime over Texas. This will not hurt Texas too much, but they will drop. How far they drop, we'll see. But it's anticipated that they will still be able to host in the first round. But Georgia gets the bye. The Big Ten Championship went as pretty much expected. Oregon won 45-37 over Penn State. But a high-scoring affair. Oregon does give up its fair share of points from time to time, but a very explosive team, and they do have a good defense. Just Penn State played really well, but gave up 45 points and lost this game. 45-37, Oregon's the number one seed, should be. Penn State will fall. How far they fall, we'll see. Losing to Oregon, there's no shame in that. We'll see how far they fall. They don't really have a signature win, necessarily. They just have two losses against two very powerful teams in Oregon and Ohio State. The other one, Arizona State beat Iowa State, 45-19. That gave Arizona State a spot in the playoff and a first-round bye. It's anticipated that they get a first-round bye because of their 11-2 record. They would be, along with Boise State, Georgia, and Oregon, the four highest-ranked conference champions. So Arizona State will get a first-round bye. They go from being picked last in the Big 12, last, to be getting a first-round bye. And then you have Boise State. They've been great all year, and they won 21-7 over Barry Odom and the UNLV Rebels. And it has been reported, if you didn't know already, that Barry Odom is going to get the Purdue job, that they are hammering out the final details there. So that's really something. But Boise State shouldn't sniff at what they've done. They have run the table except for a 37-34 loss at, guess who, Oregon. Boise State's good, folks. They get a first-round bye, and we'll see what they have to deal with and where this bracket is forcing a team on them and what that means. That's kind of where we are. The at-larges will likely be Indiana and Tennessee and Ohio State and Notre Dame and Penn State and Texas. And then the question is, who's 11 and 12? Clemson's going to be one of those. Will it be SMU or Alabama? That's pretty much where we are when it comes to the college football playoff. A team that is not in the playoff is Missouri, but we are going to be joined by their coach, Eli Drinkwitz, who has had a fine year. And we're going to discuss his team, his recruiting haul, which was big, and the fact that he is going to come down with a huge award next Monday at the Missouri Athletic Club. He is the Sports Personality of the Year at the Jack Buck Awards. Eli Drinkwitz and the College Football Playoff Bracket Reveal. It's all coming next on KMOX.
The Stifel Financial Sports Studio, Tom Ackerman.
Back on KMOX with someone I always enjoy visiting with. It's 11:16, and on the other end of the line is Eli Drinkwitz, the head coach of the Missouri Tigers. Good morning, Coach. How are you?
Good morning, man. Excited for the whole border war here. I'm already here at the arena, getting ready for the Mizzou-KU basketball game.
I love it. I figured you would be. You would either be in your office across the street or you already would be in the house. And you're in the house like a great fan. And you're a fan, without a doubt, of Dennis Gates. I can tell that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Dennis has done a tremendous job. And obviously, this is why you come to the University of Missouri to coach, to coach in environments like this. And, you know, our fans really have shown us at the football program an unbelievable amount of love and support this season. I mean, 13 straight sellouts and those guys making the environment so difficult. We were undefeated at Faroe this year, seven wins at home, which hadn't been done in school history. And next year we got 8 home games. So looking forward to continuing the streak.
Yeah. And I was in the crowd with my family at the Oklahoma game and one of my daughter's friends as well. And, you know, we're all watching it. They're both looking at colleges, and they both got into Mizzou. And so they're, you know, looking around wide-eyed at the whole scene. And you kind of take a step back and you say, you know, there are a lot of people involved here, but it's been under your watch, Eli Drinkwitz, that this football program, the stadium, the atmosphere, there is a different level to what's going on here. You are 20-5 over the last two seasons. You will be playing in another great bowl game against a competitive opponent, and there's more to come. I think there are a lot of things that are building right now for Mizzou, as much as you'd love to be announced today on ESPN as one of the top 12.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, at the end of the day, our goal is to make the playoff. We didn't quite get it done this year. We were about a minute 10 and a 2-minute drive from getting it done, but we put ourselves in that position. Never going to apologize for finishing in the top 20 in the country, which is what we did through the regular season. You know, now it's an opportunity for us to continue the momentum. Obviously, these next couple of weeks are going to be important with what we do from a portal standpoint, as well as, you know, what we continue to build with the momentum. You know, I got a sneaky feeling we'll probably be playing somebody like Iowa in the Music City Bowl or something like that. So pretty excited about whatever the opportunity will be. It'll be a great matchup versus two really good football teams, no matter where we go, because we earned that this year.
I am with you on that. And you've also, the other thing that you've done, just to keep it local here, is you have changed the game here in St. Louis. And not just Luther Burden and Brady Cook and so many others that have made your team successful, but I'm looking right now at some of these top players that you just picked up in the recruiting period. Eureka, Herman, we count them. Herman, we count Herman in the St. Louis area.
Absolutely.
Althoff, East St. Louis, DeSmet, right on down the line, you have made an impact here in St. Louis. Your recruiting of St. Louis is actually, if you were looking at a checklist of things that you've been able to accomplish, that has to be up there pretty high.
Yeah, I mean, that's where it all starts for us is recruit the state. And obviously St. Louis is an incredible part of our state. And when Missouri's at its best, we're recruiting St. Louis at its best. And for us to hit the number one player in the state back-to-back seasons, whether that's Kansas City or St. Louis, is really important for us. And now we got to, you know, turn and build that for next year. Obviously, some really, really good players in the 26th class, highlighted by DeSmet, winning the state championship 2 days ago.
on Friday night. So a lot of really good players in this state, and got to continue to do our job and get them.
You know, I was looking over the season, and as the season was going, actually, and I kept asking myself, you know, what is Missouri's identity? Who are they? And what are their wins, and what can they hang their hat on? And I figured it out as the season was going along, probably after the Auburn game, Oklahoma, everything, they all tied together. You found ways to win football games. At the end of the day, if things were not going well, I just talked to Doug Armstrong, the GM of the Blues, about this very thing. How high is your floor? And if your floor is high enough that when things aren't going well, you can still find a way to win, that has to be a positive for what you're trying to do.
Yeah, I mean, I think our team's willingness to embrace their role and put the team first, no matter what the scenario is, you know, never give up in any situation. I thought our guys, fought. I think we're 9-1 in one possession games in the last 2 years. And so, you know, obviously, as we continue to increase the talent level, I think that's, you know, an opportunity to continue to try to get bigger wins. But at this in this conference, 16 deep, adding two of the best schools in the country with Texas and OU, for us to finish, you know, in back-to-back seasons in the top six, you know, when we don't necessarily have a top six budgets and all NIL and all that other stuff, for us to be swinging above our weight class, I think is a great sign. And now we got to continue as coaches is to continue to increase our talent level so that we can continue to do that. And that's the plan.
I'm curious your thoughts at quarterback as you look forward here. And obviously you're going to have to replace Brady Cook, one of the all-time battlers, without a doubt, at the University of Missouri. Do you want that type of person first before you're talking about talent? What do you look for in a quarterback?
Yeah, I mean, you know, at the end of the day, it's going to be a wide-open competition, whether we get somebody out of the portal or whether it's somebody we have on campus or whether it's a true freshman. You know, it's going to be a quarterback competition, which, you know, at the University of Missouri, we're not scared of. We understand that competition is what makes greatness. And so for us, toughness, preparation, accuracy, decision-making, and leadership are really the five characteristics of a great quarterback. And so we're going to be looking for those five characteristics with whoever our starter is.
And then when it comes to, of course, looking at this bowl game, how healthy are you? And where do you see yourself in that area as you move forward?
Yeah, well, we're going to be, I mean, it'll be, I don't know how healthy we'll be. I mean, we'll be healthy from a standpoint of the guys who had nicks and bruises, but obviously we've lost quite a few players to season-ending injuries, whether you're talking about Connor Tolleson or some other guys who are getting fixed up so they can be ready for spring practice. We obviously, Luther's declared for the draft, Armand's declared for the draft. But the one thing I know about this team is we're a gritty, tough football team, and everybody's going to want to send Brady Cook and Theo Weiss and Johnny Walker and Christian Williams and Chuck Hicks and all these other guys out the right way. And so, you know, we got a couple weeks to find it, put it together, piece it together, and that's what we'll do.
How do you block out, and you've done it all year, I feel like, the noise so that your players, not that it's happening now, but during the season, I heard you refer to that a lot. I don't care what people say about us. We're not going to listen to all that. How do you accomplish that as a coach and a staff?
Well, I think it's you got to be truth tellers, right? And at the end of the day, there's not a lot of truth. There's opinions, but it's not always truth. And in order to be a truth teller, you have to have a relationship with your team, and they got to respect that you'll be willing to be honest with them. And that's really what we're going to do moving forward, is you just continue to be honest and tell the truth and align what you say and what your actions do. And I think that's really been the biggest significant improvement for us over the past 3 years, is just the alignment of what we say and what we do and how we carry our standards around. You know, culture's not what you say on the walls. It's what's talked about in the halls and the way your actions are led. And I think that's been the really cool thing about this team, is our actions and our words have aligned.
Eli Drinkwitz is with us, and on December 16th, he is going to be honored at the Missouri Athletic Club. Coach, the members of the Missouri Athletic Club received a ballot at the beginning of October. They went over it. They made their evaluations, and when it was all said and done, you received the most votes as sports personality of the year. You can only win it once. Jack Buck started this back in 1970. Bob Gibson was the first winner. And in 2024, you will receive the sports personality of the year at the MAC. What are your feelings on that?
Yeah, I mean, what an awesome honor to see the names of other people who have received that award. I think it's pretty prestigious and pretty cool. And you know, to have the opportunity to be associated with such great people is an awesome opportunity.
And Brady Cook is going to receive the Carl O. Bauer Award, and he'll be right by your side. It'll be when you get that response from the crowd, I think you'll be blown away by the ovation from that group in there. It's a heck of a room, which I'm sure you're well aware.
Yeah, well, I'm pretty fired up. You know, I've been to I was at a Christmas party on Friday night in St. Louis at 801 Chop House, and everybody was already talking about that event and how excited they were. So it kind of raised my level of expectation.
That's cool. Well, I look forward to seeing you. Thank you, as always, for joining us on KMOX. Have a great game today as Mizzou takes on Kansas, and Eli Drinkwitz will be in the crowd. We appreciate you.
Hey, M-I-Z beat KU.
There he is. Eli Drinkwitz, the head coach of the Tigers, jumping in on sports on a Sunday morning. Well, they are, as we were talking, they are revealing the college football playoff bracket. So let me tell you right now what we have in front of us. They have already revealed the bracket when it comes to the byes. So the 12-team field, Oregon is number one. That was expected. Number two is Georgia, the SEC champion. They've just revealed that Boise State will be the 3 seed, receiving a first-round bye as the Mountain West champion, and Arizona State has checked in as the number 4 seed, and they get a bye in the first round as well as the Big 12 champion. Again, Oregon, Georgia, Boise State, and Arizona State are seeded 1 through 4 and will receive a first-round bye. They are methodically going through the bracket reveal, and right now they've revealed the first-round matchup, 5 versus 12. It will be Texas as the 5 seed. Texas lost to Georgia last night, 22-19 in overtime in the SEC championship, and Texas will play Clemson. Clemson is the 12 seed, the ACC champion. They could not get a bye. They weren't ranked high enough, but they will get in as an at-large, of course, as the champion. So the 5 versus 12 will be Texas at home against Clemson, and the winner gets Arizona State as the 4. What a run that could be. At first glance, that looks like something that Texas would be find very appealing. As the 5, they've earned that, as they're the best team not receiving a bye. But we'll see. The 5 against 12, and then they get Arizona State next. We'll go through the rest of them when we come back. Penn State has just been announced as a 6 seed. They will play somebody who has not been revealed yet, and then the winner gets Boise State. We'll take a quick break. John Mozeliak joins us next on KMOX.
Billikens win! Billikens win!
Once again, from the Stifel Financial Sports Studio, Tom Ackerman.
Before we get to the college football playoff in completion here, let me just say thank you to Eli Drinkwitz joining us, Doug Armstrong joining us, two big decision makers, and I got another one on the line hanging on right now, and that's John Mozeliak, the Cardinals president of baseball operations. They are just about to reveal the final team of this bracket, so I'll do that bracket reveal after we talk to Mo, who we appreciate his time so much. He is in Dallas this week for the baseball winter meetings. His final one is Cardinals president of baseball operations, and good morning, Mo.
Good morning, Tom.
It's great to be on with you as always, and thank you for doing this. I look forward to seeing what happens down there. I mean, just as a whole with Major League Baseball and how the Cardinals fit into everything, you know. One thing before we talk about, you know, little bits and pieces of what you're trying to build, I notice the Cardinals just overall a feel that you all are saying we could be pretty competitive this year. I mean, you know, the NL Central, the Cardinals organization is trying to win, making sure that while expectations are being managed, that you're not putting out a message that this is a rebuild or a complete teardown of any sort.
No, it is a, you know, it is a different off season for us, no doubt. But really the theme this year is going to be to try to create a lot of opportunity for our younger players, try to figure out exactly what we have. And I do feel like our team is going to be better than a lot of people think we will be, but you know, a lot of that is, hedging on some you know, steps forward from some of our players. Obviously, we think about somebody like a Nolan Gorman. You know, can he be that middle of the order bat? He's going to have to make some adjustments, but if he can, could have a special hitter there. Obviously, someone like Jordan Walker has to make some adjustments at the plate. I know he's working on it as we're speaking, so that's encouraging. But really, it's going to be like, can guys step up? Because, you know, overall, we like our starting pitching. We like our bullpen. Obviously, these are not finished products as we sit here on December 8th because there's still some work to be done. But, you know, overall, we got to approach these meetings being opportunistic and see really if there's other ways that we can try to help our club in the short term, but also look at this organization to set it up for long-term success, and that's what we'll do.
You know, when I look at the club in the short term, and you just answered some of that because you're pinning your hopes on Walker, Gorman, and others to deliver in this manner, but I do wonder where the power comes from. And there's two of them right there, Gorman especially, can hit for a lot of power. But do you also look at it that way? Where will the power come from? Particularly, I look at that outfield combination. If I'm projecting, you know, Knute Barciani Walker or Knute Bar Scott Walker, whatever the combination, where is that power going to come from with this club?
Yeah, you're hoping that somebody like a Walker steps up and does that. And I do think it's been a little bit of an afterthought with Contreras in the sense that he you know, he is a guy that can post about a 900 OPS, and if he does that, that's a pretty good middle of the order batter.
Yes, it is. I actually think that's a bigger deal than people are making it out to be. Not that he's playing first base and that he could be healthy and hit in the middle of the order for you, but the fact that he wanted to come back, that he wanted to be part of this. How did that go down? I think I've talked to you about this before, but if we can just, for our listeners, do you feel like that was a positive for you, that he wants to be part of this?
You know, obviously, when we entered the offseason and we came out with our strategy, obviously I had some apprehension on what individuals were going to think and what they were going to want to do. And I think the feeling around our team is that they like our young core. They want to be a part of this. And I think in Wilson's case, you know, obviously playing more first base is something that he's just looking at a way to make sure he can extend his career, but also maybe be more impactful when he is at the plate. I think sometimes when you're catching, you're trying to really serve two masters, and when you're not catching, you can really just focus on the offense. So I think he's looking forward to seeing what he can do in that regard.
Is your phone lighting up? Are you getting still a lot of calls about players in particular? I want to be careful because, I mean, you obviously are in the middle of trying to build this thing, so I'm not going to put you in a bad position. But, you know, there are a lot of players that are being mentioned out there as part of trades, but, you know, it takes two to tango, does it not? I mean, you've got to be able to find something that is worth your while.
Yeah, I would definitely say over the last week and a half, it's the volume of calls has definitely gone up. So from that standpoint, you know, just trying to remain open-minded and, you know, understand really what these markets look like. And, you know, ultimately, my team will try to assess what we think is best for today and also the future and see if we can't make some decisions. But I do think there'll be some activity this week. It just feels like things are starting to loosen up overall in the baseball market. So I do think if you're one of those people that like to follow action, there should be some this week.
Well, we will certainly keep an eye on that. We're going to have a trio of people down at the winter meetings in Dallas in Mike Claiborne and Ricky Horton and Matt Pauly, all from our radio team. John Mozeliak is with us, president of baseball operations, and Heim Bloom will be taking over that title next year. He's been a busy man, as has Rob Serfolio and you and everybody else. You have a whole new group here coming. If you wouldn't mind commenting on some of these members, looking over your personnel, for maybe a better term for those familiar would be farm director, but he'll be the director of player development, is Larry Day. Tell me about Larry coming from the Guardians organization.
Yeah, so he was their field coordinator. I think he is someone that's going to fit in really well. He gets along with pretty much anybody. Obviously, it's gonna take a different look, right? You know, we've been a part of Gary LaRocque for so long, but you know, things are changing, and I think Larry is, you know, your classic baseball guy. He's been around the game, knows it. But yeah, we're going to add a lot of depth to our player development over the course of the next, probably next month, but hopefully get some of this stuff wrapped up before the holidays if possible.
Hey, you certainly have a lot of things you want to do there, and the Cardinals have made it very clear that they're putting all of their resources, a lot of resources, back into that area of the organization. And the Carl Cochran addition, I feel like, is a big one. You've told me you want to be a more athletic team, at this top level and all the way down. If the performance coordinator with the Los Angeles Dodgers from their minor league system is coming in, that seems like a very significant step. They seem to do that very well.
You know, he has a really impressive background. There's not many people that have 5 World Series rings, so that should speak for itself. He won 3 with the Giants as their head strength coach, and then when he migrated over to the Dodgers, he obviously has 2 with them. But you know, he has a really interesting background, impressive resume, and, you know, does have some local connections, played at Southern Illinois, and, really excited to be a part of the Cardinals. So I think he's a great addition, and I look forward to watching him work and working with him.
And Matt Pierpont is now going to be the director of pitching. Tell us how that title and what that job entails for Matt.
Basically, his role will be to oversee all pitching throughout our minor league system. And, you know, the old version of that might have been a pitching coordinator, but to get these types of people, you have to up the title a little bit. But his responsibility will be broad. We still will bring in a pitching coordinator, but overall his emphasis will be on, you know, really trying to optimize or maximize what we're getting out of our pitchers from A to Z.
It does feel like there's even more cohesion than ever, that there will be a lot of communication more than ever. That's something that is just a complete change here, it seems like, than ever between your top level and all the way through the minor leagues, that this is going to be a seamless, that's kind of the goal here.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd agree with that statement. I think, you know, from bottom, top, bottom, we've always had pretty good communication and pretty open lines of communication. And so, you know, I don't think that's going to drastically change that much in terms of, you know, making sure that everybody's on the same page, making sure that collaboration is happening in a 360 model, I think is going to be a little different than where we've been. But, you know, we also have newer people and some people that are younger, whereas in the past we had some people that, you know, had 30, 40, 50 years of experience. So it was a little different. But, you know, overall, I feel like from a communication standpoint, I hope we're as good as where we were.
Yeah.
And that would be great.
Maybe I just didn't word that right. Collaboration is probably a better word. Just a more seamless move here between everybody. Completely understand that. Winter meetings, Dallas. John Mozeliak is going to be there. Always gracious enough to join us on KMOX. Appreciate you. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Tommy. Bye-bye.
Good to visit with the Cardinals president of baseball operations. So the college football, before we go to, I'll tell you what, let's take a break and we'll reveal it with Bernie Miklas and get his comments on it. And then we'll talk about some more things on the way. Sports on a Sunday morning on KMOX continues right after this. We close the show with Bernie Miklas on Sports on a Sunday morning. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing good. You know, I've been listening to you and listening to John Mozeliak and all your other excellent guests and monitoring the college football playoff selection show. So it's been a very busy but very enjoyable Sunday morning so far.
Yes, it has. Thank you very much for listening. And we've had a great lineup of guests, including you. And I wanted to get your analysis, instant analysis, as the bracket was just revealed. So SMU gets that spot over Alabama. And, of course, ESPN milks it for all it's worth, takes it down to the last second, and reveals SMU over Bama. I am actually pleasantly surprised. I thought that the SEC muscle would be too much, but somehow, some way, the Mustangs got in there over the 3-loss Tide.
Tom, I echo what you say. I really thought that, pardon the expression, I really thought that the fix would be in. I mean, we've seen it happen in the past with Alabama, although I must point out there was one year where Alabama was the number five and they didn't get in, even though TCU lost the conference championship game and TCU went to the tournament and actually won a game. So it has happened. It's not like Alabama always gets a benefit of the doubt, but I just assumed it would be this way again. It just seemed like Ward Manuel, the chairman of the committee, some of the stuff he was saying was being interpreted as like, well, you know, the teams that are not playing in a conference championship game, you know, there's nothing there that would hurt them, you know, where they are is where they are type thing. And I'm not quoting that exactly, and I apologize. But he was implying that, well, you know, we already know where Alabama is. That was how it was interpreted anyway. So I'm like you. I was pleasantly surprised that they went with SMU. And really, listen, Alabama, the outcome in that ACC game was the worst thing that could have happened to Alabama. Because one of two things had to happen. Alabama needed SMU to win. That didn't happen. Or they needed Clemson to win, but to do it in a way where they just blew SMU out. And listen, it looked like it was going to go that way because SMU was down 17 at the half and 17 going into the fourth quarter. So if Clemson had blown out SMU, I think they could have justified maybe bringing Alabama in. But the way that the Mustangs fought back, the way they just refused to quit, they scored 17 straight points before Clemson, to their credit, scrambled for that 56-yard field goal in the final seconds. That obliterated any possibility that you know, the committee would do something so vicious as to bounce SMU after what we saw last night. And here, one other thing about this, if I could, because I was thinking about this a lot. Listen, if SMU was in the tournament, so to speak, before the ACC championship game, the losing on a last-second field goal shouldn't cause them to drop below Alabama. If the committee thought Alabama was better last week in the rankings, which they did, it would not have had the Crimson Tide three spots below SMU last week. So Alabama's got better wins, but that was the case 5 days ago, and nothing's changed in that regard, so SMU should be in. The other thing, of the two teams, Alabama's blowout loss at Oklahoma was far worse than either of SMU's defeats to BYU or Clemson.
Yeah, true. I'm with you on that. So the way it's going to go down on Saturday, you're going to have Clemson, Texas. You're going to have Tennessee, Ohio State. This is the 21st. You're going to have SMU, Penn State. The winner of Clemson, Texas gets Arizona State. The winner of Tennessee at Ohio State gets Oregon, a possible Ohio State-Oregon rematch, although Tennessee's good. SMU at Penn State, winner gets Boise State. And then Friday night is going to kick the whole thing off, Indiana at Notre Dame. Are you kidding me? That is a great situation for IU. They're 2 hours away from Notre Dame. They get to go up there. I would imagine some of their fans are going to squeeze their way in there. Notre Dame's awfully good. Winner gets Georgia, which is daunting, but you got to take care of business first.
I love that they put those two teams together. You know, I that was my favorite matchup that's coming out of this opening round, for lack of a better term, because there's just so much to it. What an opportunity it is for Indiana, because some people question their resume, and it is true. You know, they don't have a win against anybody who's in the top 25 right now. And so you could make a case to ding them. But I thought they deserved to be in there all along. Listen, there's never going to be a perfect way to do this. It's just not going to happen, because you can evaluate all these teams. There's so many different things. Some people prefer, well, strength of schedule's got to be the biggest thing. Strength of record's got to be the biggest thing. No, the conference you play in, like, you know, if you play in the SEC, you should be given more weight than if you play in the Big 12 or the ACC. And, you know, no. It's all about how many top 25 wins do you have? I mean, we all go around in circles, man. We chase our tails. And at the end of the day, there's not a perfect formula. And so there's going to be some questionable things. But I like the way this thing was laid out. I really do. I think all things considered, knowing that there's no way to make everybody happy, I thought the committee did a pretty good job. And I could nitpick a bunch of things, but what's the point?
No, exactly. It's the first 12-team playoff we've ever had. So let's enjoy it, and then we can figure it out from there. For me, last night was so enjoyable. I mean, I'm just sitting there enjoying a nice dinner down at Katie's Pizza in Ballpark Village, knowing that my team's going to be in tomorrow, and no stress whatsoever. Now I can stress again with Indiana having to play Notre Dame. It should be fun to watch it play out. We have 2 minutes left, Bernie.
Sure.
Your thoughts on the winter meetings. What, from a Cardinals standpoint, would you like to see accomplished?
I don't know that anything will be accomplished, and I'm not saying that in any way, shape, or form to suggest it's not important. In fact, I would, again, kudos to KMOX for sending Matt Pauly down there to be with Ricky Horton and Mike Claiborne. I think it's great. But I think John Mozeliak is still laying groundwork. And, you know, I listened to, of course, the interview that you just had with him and some of the comments he made to Katie Wu, The Athletic. The Cardinals, at least publicly, you know, they're not – they don't seem inclined at this point to trade either Ryan Helsley or Eric Fetty. And if they don't want to do that, or they don't do that, and they would only do it, I assume, if they got blown away by great offers, then really the one thing to watch this during the winter meetings is the continuing market, probably with only a few teams interested in Nolan Arenado. So I just think it's kind of a research week for Mo and his staff to see what kind of offers are coming in that would convince them to part with Helsley or Fetty. And the only reason I throw Fetty out there is because he's a walk-year guy, and the starting pitching market in free agency is going absolutely bananas. Teams are losing their minds. They're so desperate for starting pitching. So my thought is Fetty's a Scott Boras client. He's going to leave after this year, I would say 90%. So you trade one season of him to bring in like an influx of more young talent that's going to make you better in the future. From that standpoint, to me, it makes sense. But if the Cardinals are going to stay with what they have and not give these guys away cheaply, I appreciate that part of it. But they're in an interesting situation because they haven't been this way before. I mean, this is the first time in a long time where they're sitting in this position. But They sound like they want to still try to win and still be really competitive and put a good team on the field. I would suggest, hey, why don't you add to the roster you have? And I don't mean any big fish. We know they're not going to do that. So this is a really interesting winter meeting for John Mozeliak's final winter meeting because there's a whole different vibe to it.
Yeah, definitely. We'll have a big breakdown tomorrow at noon on the Gas House Gang. Bernie Miklas will join me along with Kevin Wheeler and Matt Pauly live from the winter meetings in Dallas, sponsored by Saliga Heating and Cooling, an American Standard heating and air conditioning dealer. Make sure you subscribe to The Bernie Show on YouTube. It's an absolute must. When big news breaks or big stories come out, he breaks it down like no one else. Thank you, my friend.
Tom, have a good rest of your Sunday, brother.
Appreciate you. Coming up on noon on KMOX.